The information provided in this podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only. Topics discussed are related to weight loss, diet, and exercise, and the views expressed by the hosts and guests are based on their personal experiences. The Weighing In with Patrick podcast is not affiliated with WW International, Inc., and the content presented is not endorsed by, nor should it be considered representative of, the official views or policies of WW International, Inc. This podcast does not constitute a counseling relationship. It does not offer mental health or medical advice. Always consult with your physician or healthcare professionals before making any changes to your diet or exercise routine.
Okay. So I did the Richard Simmons deal a meal. Mm-hmm. I tried keto twice. Neither time worked for me. I tried the Slim Fast when that was popular. Mm-hmm. Gained weight on Slim Fast. And I also did this thing. I went and saw a nutritionist, and I did a low glycemic diet that she put me on, where you didn't count anything. You just ate low glycemic foods. But that came with medication, so that helped not overeat. Yeah. I did lose weight on that. The reason I quit going to her, two reasons. It was very expensive for me. It was $100 a month. And it was, I lost like 23 pounds in like 3 months. And she was like, okay, now we got to amp it up so we can lose more.
Was and that it, in Detroit?
No, that was here. Oh. That was through my gynecologist through here. And I was like, I had a lot of Weight Watcher background. And I'm like, 23 pounds in 3 months is pretty good progress. Mm-hmm. So I got frustrated with that. And I also bought a food journal and did all the food journal actually tracks all your macros and stuff. And I did the food journal for probably 6 months and I lost probably 25 pounds on that. The problem is it was a lot to track. Mm-hmm. Weight Watchers does make it easier. Mm-hmm. And I just, after a while, I just slipped back into old habits.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Weighing In podcast. I am Patrick Hall, your Sherpa on this podcast journey, I suppose. I am recording this right now. It is 8:36 Central Time. I am on the Gulf Coast. On the panhandle of Florida with my lovely wife, Courtney. We are on a vacation. And I thought I would bring some of the podcast equipment. We thought we would also do, I think I mentioned it in the last episode, that we were going to do a vacation-themed podcast conversation, just kind of talking about what we do when we go on vacation, how we plan, and what our thoughts are, how we kind of conceptualize what our vacation is going to look like from the standpoint of people who have lost some weight and want to keep it at bay. But that intro there was Kathy Mason, and she is the most recent featured tribe mate from the WW meetings held Saturday mornings in Rock Hill, South Carolina. If you're just by happenstance, you are not a WW member, or if you are a WW member in Rock Hill or elsewhere, but you do not attend the Saturday meeting, my guess is you'll probably get something out of this as well. And the purpose of this podcast is to introduce, on a somewhat deeper level, the people that attend that meeting. 45 minutes, or meetings are supposed to last 30 minutes, but for us, they always tend to go a little long, just because people participate and people want to share, and that's great. Yeah, that's a problem that I'm sure many group leaders wish they had, right? People that want to participate and share. But like I said, when you have 20 to 30 people in a room and 30 minutes, it's difficult for everybody to kind of talk about where they're at, where they've been, where they want to go, and what the plan is to get there, that type of thing. And as usual, WW has had yet another change in addition to the new CEO. And I don't know if that CEO is just going to stay the interim CEO or if that person has permanently taken the reins over. I know Courtney and I have been actually chatting a little bit about that. Kind of some of the things that have happened recently on the corporate level and as it seems to be funneling down into our meeting rooms. And we'll be talking about that most certainly. You know, my conversation with Kathy, as I said, possibly, and I think I said in the first episode, you know, it just was really enjoyable. Kathy's one of those individuals that you just know, boy, she's probably got all sorts of great stories. You know, she's somebody I would definitely could see myself bellying up to the bar and just say, all right, tell me the story, right? And she would probably have 20 or 30 stories in her pocket ready to go at any moment. And she's witty and funny and engaging and interesting, and I really hope I get to have another shot at getting her in front of one of the microtinis, as it were. And you know, this is part two of our conversation, and you know, she talks a little bit about willpower versus discipline, and how willpower has been kind of part of her journey. We kind of touch a little bit on experiences with doctors and diets and the evolution of her WW involvement. And, you know, yeah, I actually learned some things about Kathy that I did not know. It was actually kind of neat. She talks a little bit about how she in the past may have rationalized weight gain, and then kind of the impact of Saturday meetings and how her tribe mates I don't know, I guess probably taking on more of a role in her life than perhaps maybe she had banked on when she returned to WW here in Rock Hill. But I think you will find her conversation with me, specifically the things that she had to say, to be quite interesting. And I hope that you will identify with them the way that I did. And you will come to have a better understanding of an appreciation, I think, for Kathy and her attendance and her willingness to engage the group process when we are together Saturday mornings. I think that's about it before I hit play on the conversation itself. I will definitely be back at the end of the conversation to provide some final thoughts on my discussion with her, and maybe some other things that are rattling around in this noggin of mine. But stick around, and I hope you'll really enjoy it. I really do. Hey, Patrick here. We love our Saturday meeting, am I right? But hearing from one another 30 minutes a week can only do so much. We can sometimes believe that we're all alone in the trials and tribulations of this weight loss thing. This podcast seeks to challenge this belief by talking with familiar faces who will share their experiences, helpful suggestions, and insights about their journey. The good, the bad, and hopefully, the hilarious. This is about us, you and me.
ordinary people working on improving our health, reducing our relationship with gravity, and most importantly, supporting one another. Welcome to Weighing In with Patrick, the Meeting After the Meeting podcast.
Do you think it's all willpower?
I do. I think because I had said back when we were under Lynn in a meeting once, I think everybody has a willpower muscle. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it atrophies mm-hmm. and you can't, it's like you don't have any at all. Mm-hmm. And you just, whatever your willpower is against, drinking, alcohol, whatever, you just give into it, right? But then if you back away and don't eat the, say, Weight Watchers wise, if I don't eat the donut, okay, right. I didn't eat the donut Thursday, that makes me stronger for Friday, which will make me stronger for Monday. So that muscle builds back up. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you don't even know you're using willpower because it's just you don't think about it. But then once you give into that for a little bit, that deteriorates your muscle again. Mm-hmm. So you got to keep that willpower muscle strong. Mm-hmm.
So, have you ever read the book Willpower?
No.
Because it sounds like you have.
No.
So there's a book called Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength by John Tierney and Roy Burmeister, I think was the guy's name. They talked about willpower, not so much as a muscle, but as like a fuel tank.
Okay.
And that if you're always running on fuel power, on willpower, that fuel tank is bound to get diminished, and you've got to keep it filled. And so how do you keep it filled really is the trick, and mm-hmm. that you can't always rely solely on willpower, right? In other words, if it's just you versus the world, you're kind of opening yourself up. You're making yourself more vulnerable than you need to be. And so they kind of talk about willpower should be a piece of it, but at the same time, you also have to have resources outside of yourself. But that sounds kind of like what you do anyways.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we come to the meetings. That's why I, you know, even though I don't have to come every week, because mm-hmm. at Lifetime, you know, technically you don't have to. I have to.
What's the difference then, do you think, between the idea of willpower and discipline? Because when I hear you talk about things that you do, I hear more discipline. And what's the difference in your mind between discipline and willpower?
Honestly, the way I think of willpower, I don't think there's too much difference. I think it takes discipline to stay away from the table. Mm-hmm. But I think it also takes, I think willpower, in my mind, willpower is more in your mind. Mm-hmm. Like it's squashing the voices.
Thoughts?
Yes. Like saying, turning off those voices that say, you know, you're a Lifetime, you can have it, you know, mm-hmm. your clothes fit, you know. Discipline is probably what tells you, the voice that tells willpower, shut up, or, you know, because, I mean, and I think I kind of use it interchangeably. Mm-hmm. And it probably comes from when I was, so my parents both loved to drink. Mm-hmm. They liked sweets. Uh-huh. They, you know, but I used to say my dad, so all us kids had different attributes from our parents. Mm-hmm. I got the willpower from my dad mm-hmm. because my dad, I mean, he retired. They found one teeny tiny spot on his lung. He put down his pipe and his cigars and he never smoked again.
Never thought about it again, probably.
Right. And I always equated that to willpower, that he's just strong like that, right? Mm-hmm. That it's a strength. And I've done that myself. Like when I come, you know, like what I said, I had to come to Jesus meeting with me myself last week I talked about. Mm-hmm. And I just stopped.
Can you rehash that a little bit?
So the week before last, I was finding myself falling right back into old habits. Mm-hmm. I'd be on plan for a day, And then something would, you know, tempt me and I'd be like, okay. And I'd eat the garbage, right?
Yeah.
And I could tell that my weight was going up and I could tell my physical self, I wasn't feeling as good. Like I was starting to feel nasty all the time. And finally, one night I was just like, enough. You're going to be right back where you were and you're going to lose your lifetime. So I journaled it all down, what I was feeling, and it was not nice. I spoke to myself like somebody who cared about, like, it wasn't negative. It was just straightforward. It was very factual. Like, you got to cut this shit out, mm-hmm. you know, or you might as well say goodbye to it and you might as well gain all your weight back.
Right.
And so I devised a plan and I was going to track every day. I mean, and I wrote down in my journal and and for that I needed to also count calories for a week.
Tracking calories, you're tracking your points, but what do those points consist of?
Right.
Right. And is that, are my food choices, even though I'm within my points, are they having an impact on the data that comes with the scale?
Right.
And you determined yes?
For the most part, yeah. So I found that I normally eat between 1,300 and 1,400 calories a day. Mm-hmm. And I fall in about 20 points a day, typically. Mm-hmm. So, but there were some days when one day I was at 1,600 calories, mm-hmm. but I was only at 14 points. Because, like frozen cherries, a cup of frozen cherries is 100 calories.
How much sugar in there? Any idea?
No. So I was going to track the macros too and all the stuff, but that's a lot. And
yeah,
that's a lot. Yeah. And I have done that before, but it takes a lot. Mm. So I was just like, I'm not going to do that. But that's an example of how a 0 point food, you know, you can't eat a bag of cherries and expect to lose weight. I don't care. I mean, and when I was a leader before, I used to tell people that. Right. I'd be like, yes, fruit is 0 points, but remember, everything has calories.
Right.
So even though you have to listen to your body.
Right. It's tough to outwork bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I heard at least three different diets in there. There was the one your mother first put you on.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the one you forced yourself into based on what your dad said to you.
Right.
Right. Then there was the kind of de facto diet that you were on because your mother and sister were doing the diet center.
Right.
What other diets, or let's start out with how many other diets do you think you attempted, even if it was only for a single day? How many do you think you tried?
Probably between three and five.
Okay.
So I did the Richard Simmons Deal a Meal.
Mm-hmm.
I tried keto twice. Mm-hmm. Neither time worked for me. I tried the Slim Fast when that was popular. Mm-hmm. Gained weight on Slim Fast. Mm-hmm. And I also did this thing. I went and saw a nutritionist, and I did a low glycemic diet that she put me on, where you didn't count anything, you just ate low glycemic foods. Mm. But that came with medication, so that helped not overeat. Yeah. I did lose weight on that. The reason I quit going to her, two reasons. It was very expensive for me. It was $100 a month, and it was I lost like 23 pounds in like 3 months, and she was like, okay, now we got to amp it up so we can lose more.
Was that in Detroit?
No, that was here.
Oh.
That was through my gynecologist through here. And I was like, I had a lot of Weight Watcher background, and I'm like, 23 pounds in 3 months is pretty good progress.
Mm-hmm.
So I got frustrated with that. And I also bought a food journal. And did all the food journal actually tracks all your macros and stuff. And I did the food journal for probably 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I lost probably 25 pounds on that. The problem is it was a lot to track.
Mm-hmm.
Weight Watchers does make it easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, after a while, I just slipped back into old habits.
Speaking of doctors, can you think of a doctor that was your favorite that you've had over the years? And if you don't have a favorite, that's
only dentists. Fine. I've had some good dentists, but honestly, I've been in the South for almost my entire adult life, and I have not found a doctor I actually feel good about. I go to them, but I'm not thrilled with them.
Tell me about the doctor that you would finally be a patient of that you felt good about. What would that doctor be like? What were some of the qualities that doctor would have?
Listening, for one. Mm-hmm. I mean, my current doctor listens somewhat, but he also makes up his mind what's wrong with you before you even start talking. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he hears everything. I think that they'd be a little bit more thorough. Like when, you know, the internet's a great thing. And I know you shouldn't Google symptoms and things like that, right? But when you've got something going on and you put your symptoms in and it comes out with like five different things it could be, right? And of course, always one of them is cancer, but that's the internet. I think if he would actually do tests on some of the, because you never really feel like he diagnosed you. You feel like he did the quickest thing.
You'd like him to be more curious.
Yeah, yeah. He's only done that one time. Mm-hmm. And I had a dropped foot like 6 years ago. And I saw a cardiologist. I saw a neurologist. I mean, he took it very, very seriously. It's the right. only time he's ever, other than that, it's been like, yeah, he barely even looks. Yeah, that's what it is. Hmm.
What else would a doctor? So they'd be curious, they would listen, they would ask for what you think. What else?
I think they could be more, like when I was overweight, I think something should have been said, right? I mean, some people don't like that because tactfully, but I think that, you know, him saying, hey, look, you know, you're going to head into a pre-diabetic. I mean, when I was 230 pounds, you're in growing by the day. I think you need to, you know, stop some of these habits. Tell me what you're doing. Let me see if I can give you a plan. You know, can we work together? The only doctor that did that for me was my gynecologist. Mm-hmm. And she, like 10 years ago, she asked me to get 30 minutes of exercise a day, and that did wonders for me.
Yeah.
But he's gained weight. I've seen him since I've been in this area. So I've been going to him for like 12 years.
Right.
And I've seen him get exponentially bigger and bigger. So he doesn't say anything about your own weight because he's like,
perhaps maybe he's like, well, I'm going to look like a real jerk since I'm overweight.
Yeah. I don't want to be a hypocrite. Right.
Right.
He has praised me on losing the weight. Mm-hmm. But
does he ask you how you've done it?
No, I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
Right. So you could be bulimic, losing weight. Good job losing the weight. And he doesn't find out.
He said, was that on purpose? He did say that because you can be sick with things and lose weight.
Sure.
Right. And so I think he was trying to rule that out. Like you were actually working toward this. And I think I'm the one that said, yes, it was on purpose. I've been going to Weight Watchers.
Okay.
And he was like, good for you.
Yeah.
He did say it's one of the best diets out there.
Right. And so when I hear you say, you know, tell me what you think. It kind of sounds like care enough about me to be direct.
Mm-hmm.
But be direct in a manner that isn't also insulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk to people and not put them down, right?
Yeah. Rick and I kind of talked about that last time. Having a physician that cares is important. You got to feel like your physician cares about you.
Right. You're not just an in and out, give you some pills, move on your way.
Yeah. And I think, again, I I don't really know what a better system is out there, but you know, we don't get a lot of time with our doctors. And so I think they are kind of rushing. Like, you know, have you had the experience where please show up to your appointment 15 minutes early, and you get there and they take you into the exam room after you've been in the waiting room for 20 minutes. And then you sit in the exam room for 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And then the doctor comes in for 5 minutes, and then he's gone.
And you're like, what the hell?
Right? And I've had that experience where they don't even say my name. And I'm like, I wonder if he even knows he's with the right patient.
Well, put it this way. Me and my husband have both went to him for 12 years, and I don't think he realizes we're related. Mm. Our dentist does.
Yeah.
He asks, how's Mike? And how's, you know, but he just, the only good thing is you don't wait at my doctor's office. You're in there pretty quick. He's in there pretty quick, but he's also out pretty quick.
Right. So it's not a, let me tell you what's going on.
Type thing. If I ask questions, he will explain things. Mm-hmm. He treats me completely different than he treats my husband.
Yeah.
He's rude to him. He dismisses him. He has said negative things to him. He's always been very supportive to me. So I'm not saying it's not that I don't like him, but I never really feel like when there's something specific going on that I'm worried about, I don't feel like he's that concerned about finding out what's wrong.
Hmm. So 4 or 5 different types of diets.
Mm-hmm.
Got a doctor that you're kind of like, meh, right now. What's the craziest diet you've ever tried? Anything stand out as a little nutty?
Oh, I did that weird one where you eat like a grapefruit for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And then, the guy wrote a book. He killed his.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? It starts with a P, Pritikin or something like that. But you ate really weird foods at different times.
They made the movie?
Yeah.
They made a movie about the guy, right?
Yeah. I read his book, and I did that diet back in the 90s. And, that was – the food combinations were so weird, and you were so hungry.
When did you begin Weight Watchers for the first time?
I have to think back. I always – time goes back to me to how old the kids were. So I think the first time was probably – like 1989 for the first time.
And how long did you do it?
I did that for probably 6 months. I was young, I was in my 20s then, so I mean, I was probably close to goal within 6 months. I probably only had 30 pounds to lose.
Right. Did you reach goal?
No.
Like, was it you just pulled the plug all at once, or did you just gradually drift away from it? Do you recall?
That first time I just pulled the plug.
And what happened that caused you to do that?
I probably blamed the program for not working. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't remember. I could figure out that I'm not proud of this, but there used to be legal speed that you could buy. Mm-hmm. And I found out that if I take
Dexatrim,
357 milligrams of caffeine in the morning in a pill, I don't eat all day, so I'm still losing weight. Mm-hmm. But I can drink. Whoops. Oh. So I don't have to worry about it. So I'm sure I just, because I've always been, up until this last time that I joined Weight Watchers, mm-hmm. I've always been an all or nothing girl.
Right.
I'm either doing it 100% or 0%. Mm. To lose weight was
anything to lose weight. So the pills kind of disappeared. You kind of dabbled them in again. And how many times have you tried Weight Watchers?
Probably, I would say at least 6.
6 different. I'm walking through the door for the first time again.
Mm-hmm.
Experiences. Why do you think you kept going back?
Because I did get results.
Mm-hmm.
I reached goal for the first time in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's the only program that really works for me. Mm-hmm. I try to try other things. And it, I mean, I don't know why we as humans do that. We find something that works, but yet we still try other things. Right. But I mean, even my sister Carol and I, every time we've went back, she's like, it is the only thing that works. I'm like, it is.
It's like, it's the sanest one out there.
Yeah. It's the most adaptable to your lifestyle, I think.
Mm, yeah. Our previous guest, Rick, talked about that. Like, it's his experience was of all the different diets. Like it sounded like he kind of kept getting involved in diets that had they had their own rule book, right? Like on Tuesdays, you can't eat, you know, this many carbs, but on Wednesdays, different times a day, you've got to have exactly this and you can't have any of that. And it's difficult for a long-term discipline.
Yes.
Right?
It's hard to live that way.
Yeah. And so for you, we're very similar in that regard that we've been back to Weight Watchers a bunch of different times. And so we've seen different iterations of how they present their plan, right? Mm-hmm. Core and...
Some work better than others.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, I mean, it's science, and mm-hmm. I do think that they put the work in.
Yeah. You hit goal in 2011?
Yes.
Does that mean you hit lifetime?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like for you to hit goal the very first time? Like, was it like celebration I've crossed the finish line? Or was it like, yeah, it's just Thursday?
I jumped up and down. Mm-hmm. I screamed. I scared everybody in the meeting room. And... yeah, and immediately called my sister Carol and started crying. I was so excited. It was it was huge.
Were you able to stay at goal?
I only stayed at goal for probably a little over a year. Mm-hmm. I immediately went into coaching there. I went to leader school. Mm.
For Weight Watchers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, I shouldn't have done that so quick. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't, it's really hard to stay at goal, and it's really hard to learn how to maintain weight. I think it's harder to learn how to keep your weight the same. Mm. And so I started out with one meeting, a Saturday morning meeting, and before I knew it, I was doing three meetings through the week and a Saturday morning meeting and working full time.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so I was only home one or two nights a week.
Right.
And it was... way too hard to, you know, the way I was eating, I was always on the run. Mm. So I was staying at goal because I didn't have time to eat.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I had time to learn. So when I moved here from Alabama, I made goal in Alabama. I was later in Alabama. Mm. I immediately joined. And I didn't, I went probably for a month and quit because I was like, I'm in a new place. There's all these new restaurants. I want to be normal, mm-hmm. you know? And, I kept trying it after that until this last time.
When did you move to Rock Hill?
In, 2012 or 13. I think it was 2012.
Okay. And, did you immediately start with Weight Watchers here in the Rock Hill area?
I did. After about, I was here probably about a month or two, and then I looked up a meeting, mm-hmm. and I was probably 12 pounds over my goal at that point. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, get back at it. And my idea was I was going to get to goal, because back then you had to be at goal to lead. Mm-hmm. And I was going to become a leader again, because yeah. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
I didn't stick with it. So when I lived in Alabama, we had a big thing was when we got a Golden Corral.
Right.
There really weren't many restaurants, so it was pretty easy not to be tempted by a bunch of different restaurants.
Sure.
Unless you went into Birmingham, which I didn't do very often. Mm-hmm. So coming here and seeing all this, I was like, and my husband worked out of town. So it was me and my daughter at the time, and we ate out a lot, trying all these restaurants, and I just, yeah.
What do you think it is about, you know, different restaurants, new restaurants that open that cause people to say, I just got to go there? Like what is happening that, in your opinion, that, like, when a new restaurant opens and you hear people say, it is fantastic, you must go there. What the heck is that about? Like, why must you go there?
I think it's a love of food, because I do love food. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you just, it's somewhere different. Mm-hmm. You have to check it out. You have to, you know, hear what everybody's talking about. Curiosity, mm-hmm. you know. Do you always go back? No.
Right. Started Weight Watchers in this area 2013-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, 2024. Has it been, you've been attending Weight Watchers in Rock Hill that whole time?
No. No. So I've joined in Rock Hill probably three or four times.
Three or four times.
Before this last time. And gotcha. When did I come back? 2022.
Yeah, so this... Right around you, probably shortly after Courtney and I started here.
Yeah, because next Saturday's 2 years for me coming consistently. Right. I have never came to Weight Watchers for this long.
What has happened?
It's this group. I'm telling you,
it's the group.
I do, and I think we're all friends. I think mm-hmm. we all get along, and I just, it's my outlet. It's one thing I do for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. And, you know, we're at the point in our lives where we don't do a lot, my husband and I.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're homebodies for the most part. He's very quiet. So it's my time to socialize more than, you know.
What brought you back in 2022?
I had my all-time highest weight. I had never... I weighed more when I rejoined than I did when I gave when I gave birth to my first kid.
Hmm.
Probably my second kid too.
And are you currently at goal now?
I am.
And may I ask, since 2022, how many pounds did you lose?
70.
70. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And how many pounds over the course of your life do you think you've lost total?
What
do you
think? My God.
Really, what do you think?
Probably 500.
Yeah. And so here you are in 2024. And if you had a time machine and you could go back in time to any point in your life, any point, but a point you think is... You know, that could have been a turning point right there for me, right? Towards a more positive outcome, perhaps, right? But if you could go back in time and talk to that individual at that time, whoever you were, what would that time be and what would you say?
If it's just Weight Watcher related?
Weight
related, I would say when I first walked in the door in Rock Hill that first time. Because I had the opportunity then to get those few pounds off. Because
mm-hmm.
really, in the grand scheme of things, 10, 11 pounds
mm-hmm.
isn't a lot to lose. And, yeah, I think that would have been, you know, I could have been living at goal since then.
Mm-hmm. What would you have said?
I would have said, look, you've gained a little bit of weight. It's not that big of a deal. You know, keep coming, keep doing it, mm-hmm. and, you know, be consistent.
Right. And it sounds like drift began around that time.
Mm-hmm.
It started, you know, 10 pounds up, but then suddenly it was 20, maybe, and then it was 30. Like, do you remember how were you, and maybe this is an unfair word to use, but... I think you'll understand what I mean. How were you rationalizing at that as you started to gain the weight back? how are you rationalizing not addressing it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, because at that point, I was like, okay, I'm a size 12. Oh, these are tight. I'll just go to Old Navy and get a size 14. Size 14. I still look good.
It's just one size.
Oh, these look loose, and I'll be back into the 12s. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just doing this for now.
Yeah.
Well, then before you know it, 2, 3, 4 months down the line, the size 14s are too big. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go up one more size, but, you know. And, yeah, it wasn't until 2022 I had a work event, and I needed shorts. It was in the still warm out, and I went to get shorts, and I had to get a size 20 shorts, and they were skin tight. And that has always been like a threshold size for me. You get in the twos and I'm like, hell no.
Yeah.
And I was miserable. And I found myself being miserable all the time. I wasn't happy. I was beating myself up. I was saying negative things to myself all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going up another size.
What were some of the negative things you remember saying to yourself?
Oh, I call myself a fat ass, no control, you're a pig, you know. I mean, one of my first Weight Watcher passwords was, I eat like a pig. I would never do that now.
Yeah.
This last time, I will say, has been the most life-changing of any time in my life. Mm. Because I think it's because I've went consistently, because I'm still kind of an all or nothing girl, but I finally got to the point where if my head goes up my you know what, mm-hmm. and I have a bad day where I'm eating all the things, I can wake up the next morning and go, okay, that was fun, but it's over. And I think that's what the Come to Jesus meeting came to, because I was finding myself not able to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I was finding myself doing that I'll wait till Monday thing. And
Monday never really finds its way to you.
Right. And I recognized that myself. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. all the stuff that you've learned in the last 2 years,
yeah.
you're unlearning, and you better get with it or you're going to be right back where you were.
Sounds like coming to a meeting and availing yourself to the group process that we have every Saturday morning has been very helpful and, I dare say, meaningful for you.
Yes, for sure.
You talked a lot about the relationships of the people that participate here Saturday mornings. What, in your opinion, this is kind of an unfair question to ask you to just pick one thing, but you're free to pick several. What's the most meaningful thing or experience that you've heard or had here on a Saturday meeting? Where you walked away or like, man, and it was sticking with you by Thursday and Friday.
You've said a lot of things to me that have stayed in my head, but but people's successes and failures. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we can see ourselves mm-hmm. when somebody says, I ate, you know, all the things, I ate all the donuts or whatever, and I don't know why I did that. And I mean, it's almost like a reflection of yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's also caused me to have empathy for that person and be like, I've been in those shoes and I don't want to be in those shoes again.
Right.
I mean, we're not going to be perfect.
Right.
We're not going to, I know there's never going to be another time that I'm not going to overeat.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's just, you know, that I can hope that I can control that as much as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, our brains are crazy sometimes. What they, you know, different things can trigger us and cause us to have thoughts, and we're very good at ignoring.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. My brain's perfectly normal.
Yeah. We all are.
So, and that idea of empathy, it also sounds like, would I be mistaken if the empathy maybe that you feel for others that happens here at a meeting, is that washing over into having a little bit more care and compassion for yourself?
Yes.
You think so?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you can almost feel the way they feel mm-hmm. because you've been there.
Yeah. And that's really kind of why I thought doing this podcast would be a good idea, is because, as you were saying, you know, we see each other here, but I don't know what people have been through necessarily. We get it in little morsels, right?
Right.
But we don't get more detail beyond what we're able to get in 30 or in our case, 45 minutes.
Right.
But, you know, I'm always kind of left wanting to know more about people. I find everybody just so fascinating. So we've been going for a little while. I would love to definitely sit and talk again.
Okay.
Unless we can keep going today. If you're out of time, we can stop. But
yeah, let's do it again.
Okay. I want to hear more when we sit and talk the next time. I want to hear a little bit more about the food culture of Detroit.
Oh, okay.
You've been to a Tigers game?
Oh, yeah.
You've been to a Lions game?
No.
You've not been to a Lions game?
No, I've never been to a pro football game ever.
And you're a Detroiter?
Well, you got to remember the Lions sucked my entire life until this last season.
Pistons?
Yes, I've been to a Pistons game, okay. And I've been to a Red Wings game.
So you're talking to somebody who shook the hand of Gordie Howe on two separate occasions.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, my dad used to hang out. He used to hang out at a restaurant by our house, and he had all their signatures, Gordie Howe. I mean, pictures with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gordie Howe. I have hung out with Darren McCarty and a bunch of those guys from that era because my girlfriend's friend.
That's the 90s, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She used to cut. It started out, she cut one of the Red Wings, I can't remember his name, used to cut his hair.
Uh-huh.
They ended up getting married.
Oh, my gosh.
And she actually, when I would go out with my friend, the Red Wings came to her birthday parties. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I used to be able to have a lot of fun that way.
So here in our first conversation, are there any questions you're like, why didn't he ask me that? I would have thought you would have asked me that. What, anything that I might have omitted that should have been a question?
I don't think so, because I came into this not having any expectations, okay. Not knowing what you were going to ask. Mm-hmm. And I might have been shy my whole life, but mm-hmm. I've never been one, like, if somebody asks me something.
Don't ask if you don't really want to know the answer.
Right, because I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you the truth.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, in the words of Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth. You know, people probably don't know what that's referencing. Yeah. But, I'm not embarrassed. I've seen a lot in my growing up,
mm-hmm.
having alcoholic parents.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but mm-hmm. I'm also not ashamed of it.
Yeah. It doesn't define you.
Mm-mm.
Do you have any questions for me? And that doesn't mean that you should have any. I'm just wondering.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm glad you started doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad my first podcast was definitely listening to you and Courtney, because it was very interesting.
Cool. Great. So, yeah. I'm glad you liked it. Well, I know I've enjoyed our conversation. I really want to pick it up again at some point. And you can even feel free to float me some suggestions on things you would like to talk about. Maybe they're on your heart to talk about that relate to some of the stuff here.
Okay.
Okay. If people would want to reach out to you at an email address, how could they find you?
So my email is kmason1962@icloud.com. And they can do that.
Awesome. Well,
it'd be nice to get emails from people and not from politicians and
spam.
And yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Phone calls. My I think my best friend, based on how many phone calls I get from them, their name is Scam Likely.
Yeah, right.
But thank you so much for taking a big portion of your Saturday to sit and share your story with us. It is, I am just filled with more questions than you can imagine. I would love to hear more. I'm sure the people that are listening to this would love to hear more. It has really been a pleasure sitting and chatting with you. Thank you so much, Kathy Mason.
Thank you, Patrick. I've enjoyed it a lot.
All right. Well, you have a great day, and I will be back in a few short seconds with some afterthoughts from this first conversation with the one, the many, Kathy Mason. That was my conversation with Kathy Mason. And, you know, as I have stated prior, you know, I really enjoyed listening to Kathy and how she views things and what her experiences have been. You know, if you didn't catch it, I had a few comments about one of the ideas that Kathy shared, that being the concept of willpower. And I think I agree with Kathy about what willpower can be. And I mentioned a book by Tierney and Burmeister called Willpower. And I just wanted to just share a couple of things about that book and some of the takeaways. In professional life and in my personal life, I have kind of used that book in tandem with a few others. Chiefly, one would be a book called Change Anything. And it's by five different people, but I believe one of them was called Carrie Patterson. You know, it's like one of these works that has, you know, five different contributors. It's not like an anthology, but think of it kind of like a peer-reviewed article, you know. But, you know, the book on willpower discusses what they see as, and it's in the subtitle of the book, you know, rediscovering the greatest human strength. So it is a strength. And because it's the greatest, it means obviously we have more than just willpower, right? And they talk about its impact on your ability to control yourself, how you make decisions, and your personal success, and maybe even your professional success, I guess. And they talk about willpower as being a finite resource. It's not a bottomless, limitless reservoir of go do it. And Kathy hit the nail right on the head when she called willpower being like a muscle. And you know, but like a muscle, willpower gets fatigued. And when we exert self-control, perhaps, in one area, right, it is going to deplete in another area, right? It may not be, willpower won't be as plentiful when we go to use it in for something else. And of course, the more you use it, the more fatigued and the more depleted willpower becomes. And that is an important concept, because you have to keep your eye on it almost, right? You've got to gauge, like, all right, am I tired? Have I had a long day? Am I stressed? Because when you're in those kind of, we'll just call them like a compromised mental state, your ability to exert willpower may be less, right, than when everything's going well, or mostly everything is going well. The other thing about willpower is, you know, you got to have an idea of what you're using it for. What are you going to be exerting willpower on? And so being, you know, we talked about STAR goals, at WW, right? And that first S stands for specific. And so in this book, they talk about make sure you have a specific, well-defined goal, because being specific helps you enhance your ability to exert self-control. Being clear in what you want to achieve helps kind of laser focus your willpower on your objectives. And it makes it easier to, you know, resist the trouble spots, the temptations. Then they also kind of talk about how your environment is important, right? We already talked about the impact, perhaps your emotional or your mental state, your physical health or fatigue plays. Whatever is currently in your environment plays a huge role in your ability to exert willpower. You know, if you're trying to stop drinking and you find yourself at the bar all the time around people that you used to drink with, how soon do you think it is going to be before you start drinking again? Or if you're, you know, trying to curb your spending, well, you know, if you're walking around the mall or you're walking around a plaza or you're constantly going through shopping sites, like, it's going to be difficult, right? If you're trying to lose weight, you know, going to a fast food restaurant because they're selling salad or they might have point friendly items, you know, the authors of this book, like, at least caution you about that, right? I mean, you, if you're able to do that, do it, right? I always kind of said that I stopped going to fast food restaurants because I could smell it in the parking lot. And, you know, like Pavlov's dog, I'm watering at the mouth. I'm already thinking about what it's going to taste like and all that, right? And so for me to just start walking back in to a McDonald's or Jack in the Box or a Burger King or walking down the cereal aisle at Publix, like, it's not a good idea because eventually I'm going to cave. That's what's happened before. You know, I kind of looked at it like, you know, if I was trying to stop doing drugs and I also found out that my dealer, in addition to selling drugs, is also selling flowers, I'm not going to go to him, you know, because I'm looking to get Courtney some flowers. That would be a bad idea. They also kind of talked about implementation intentions. I don't know why they called it that. That just sounds so strange to me. That was one thing about the book that it kind of left me scratching my head. Like, because when you really read it, really all they're talking about is the what ifs of life. What if this happens? What if I find myself here? What if somebody does this? Then what will I do in response? How will I handle it? Right? In other words, you're kind of planning on being challenged, but you're also planning to meet the challenge in a particular way, right? You can't plan for everything, but you can plan for some things. What are you going to tell the food pusher during the holidays, right? Come up with something. Like, that's the thing. Like, the holidays are approaching, and I think sometimes people, they just kind of go to sleep, and then suddenly they're in the house with all their family, and Aunt Mabel comes up because, are you going to eat this apple pie that I made? Well, I'll have a couple bites. You can't, right? You've got to have a response, right? Not one that's going to create a family brawl, but you want to be able to share with Aunt Mabel kind of like where you're at, or come up with a clever way that will say no, but maybe also disarm Aunt Mabel, right? Have a plan, because, you know, know the saying, right? Those who fail to plan, plan to fail. And then they talk about this idea of restoration and recovery. That if willpower is a muscle, all muscles, when exerted, need a period of rest. Why? Because that's how we grow, right? You know, when your muscles are tired, not just tired, but sore, like what's occurring inside those muscles is these little micro tears. And your body repairs itself by growing muscle. That's why muscles get big, because, you know, for lack of a better explanation, I suppose, and just to simplify it, your body's like, well, you know, Patrick keeps picking up these really heavy things and he's going to need more muscle on his arms in order to do it, right? So it's a response to the exertion your muscles are on, under. And being able to rest and get replenished and get your batteries recharged, right? Especially after you've used up a lot of willpower for something, right? Increasing those stores of willpower, or however you might be able to do that. Things that we already know, right? One of the pillars of WW is what? Sleep, right? How are you handling stress? What do you do to come back down after a stressful period or a moment? How do you take a break? You know, these things all help you restore your ability to be in self, to be in control of yourself. And allows individuals to maintain their willpower over time, right? Those are just some things that one might take away from that particular book. And that other book that I was talking about, Change Anything, and I actually recommended that to somebody here within the last few months. You know who you are. Which I have always thought was a great kind of primer on how we change. These are just kind of universals, right? That people who change tend to do things within these different spheres. And they talk about six sources of influence. And by influence, you know, what influences change, right? The first thing is something called personal motivation. We already know what that is. You know, what are your whys? And I believe that the more of them you have, the better off you are. You anchoring your direction or aiming your compass with your whys towards the direction you want to go in is a great idea. And the more of those whys you have, the more things you can tap into when you hit a rough patch, when you're challenged. And again, the whys are not just all the good things that you're trying to benefit from by making a change. But I think it also looks at all of the things that will occur by protecting the status quo, by not changing, right? So I have this to gain, and this is what I have to lose if I don't make the change. Or this is what, at least what I'm agreeing to, right? And to root those things in things that are true and accurate, and also, and I think most importantly, emotional. It's got to mean something to you. You got to be able to get fired up about it or shed a tear over it, right? Something that stirs your emotions. And then there's, you know, they talk about one's personal ability. What strengths do you currently possess? What skills, what knowledge do you have that you can employ towards making this change? What else might you need to learn in order to make the change happen, you know? What are some of the areas you have to grow in? No change is free of pain. No change, a meaningful change, that is, I believe,
is done in a manner that doesn't create discomfort. Whether it's weight loss, whether it's earning a degree, right? I mean, can you think of anything that's worth exerting yourself over that's easy, that really has meaning? And then there's social motivation. Who are the people in your life that can become helpers to get you where you want to get to? On the flip side of that coin, who are the people that will likely be a barrier to you getting there? How can you get the people that will be helpful to maybe help you a little more? And the people who might be barriers, how can you maybe, at least if they're not going to, you know, turn to the good side and be helpful, how can they be helpful by at least getting out of the way, by at least not making it more difficult for you, right? And I'm sure you have those folks in your life. Aunt Mabel, the person that finds out, oh, so you're losing weight, huh? Hey, listen, I was going to go to the that new restaurant in town. We're going this Friday. You want to come? Do they have anything that's point friendly on the menu? I don't think so, but you should come. You don't have to get anything. Mm-hmm. That person needs to have, you need to have a chat with that person, right? And so social ability is the next one. It's logical, right? It kind of fits with social motivation, which it involves your capacity to, as we say, self-advocate. Can you discuss what you're trying to accomplish with those in your social circles? Can you tell them how they can be helpful or avoid putting you in a position to act against the change you're working on? In our case, the Saturday meeting is a huge positive component of social ability, right? We go there and we hear people talk about their challenges this week, and sometimes we get something out of it, what they're saying, but then we're also there to provide support, and that helps us too, right? Making suggestions, receiving suggestions. Then you have structural motivation. What are the external rewards? So think of non-scale victories here, right? The external rewards, maybe the things you hadn't thought of, you know, that are a result of making the change. And so those non-scale victories are humongous. And listen, I'm telling you, if you're not doing it already, every time you have one, like, you should be keeping like a running list, I think. It's just my opinion. Keeping a running list of things that, oh, you know what? Because I'm working towards this, this is something else that has changed for the better in my life. Or this has stopped being a difficulty for me. Or I'm able to do this now when I wasn't able to do it before, right? Or my confidence is increased. Like, every time you get one, you should be writing it down, typing it on a running Word document or something that you can access to show. Okay, like when you have like a plateau, don't you think it would be helpful, instead of catastrophizing the plateau, to maybe look at, you know what, in spite of the plateau, look at all this other stuff that has occurred. Keep your head in the game. The change anything, it also talks about, like, you know, you've heard me maybe in meetings talk about moments. You know, moments are what this thing consists of. You know, you aren't, Courtney has a great saying that when she is confronted with a negative thought, or she feels herself resisting wanting to do something she knows is helpful towards her goal, she'll say, this is where weight loss happens, right here. This thing, what I'm thinking or doing right now, right? The thing that I want to do, this is where weight loss happens. The thing that I'm resisting, weight loss will happen because I'm going to do this. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it's going to show up at some point, right? And you've heard me talk about maybe in the Saturday meeting that our weight loss journey is filled with these little moments where we're confronted with a choice. Do I do door A, door B, door C, right? And what's the best choice for me here? Not what's the right choice, but what's the best choice that's going to bolster my chances of getting to the goal, right? Remember, again, I just can't stress this enough. I think it's just so important that you don't look at those times when things don't go well or you didn't behave the way you really wanted to behave and maybe it showed up on the scale or you felt it in your waistband, right? Don't let those moments in those situations go to waste. Learn from them. The blueprint to your success lies in those moments where maybe you just fell short. Plan. The next time this happens, I'm going to do this. I'm glad this happened. I'm glad this happened. Now I know what to do. The things you're trying to do, make them obvious and have an impact on your environment. Visual cues, reminders that like reinforce what the behaviors are that you want to engage in. Making positive choices more visible, this can increase the likelihood that you're going to follow through in the way you want to. And altering your physical and your social environment can significantly impact your ability to make the change you want to make. Those are very effective strategies. And I know that Courtney and I have had to have discussions about, you know what, that, you know, this person or that person, it just seems like every time I'm around them, they're trying to like get us to engage in a behavior that they know no longer serves us. One of the things I tell people, yeah, that's how it starts. I could have that, but that's how it starts for me. It's tracking your progress, regularly measuring your behavior, regularly measuring your progress. Those things help maintain your motivation and more importantly, your accountability, being honest with yourself. Keep a record, like I was saying. Try to identify patterns. Make adjustments as you're moving through this based on what you're seeing. The WW app tracks your weight for you. You should be looking at that frequently as you're losing weight. You should be checking in with where you started from frequently. I was there, now I'm here. Regardless. So even if, you know, I started out at 210 pounds, I'm now 220. Okay, well, don't despair. Don't freak out. Chill. Look at the data. What are you doing? Who's around you when you're doing it? What's around you when you're doing it? Where are you when you're doing it? What changes can you make? Start off with the small changes. But don't die of shame. Don't scuttle the ship at that point. Give yourself some credit. Don't have a parade, right? I was listening to Ethan Suplee. I'll probably talk about him in a second, but he was talking about how the guy lost like something like 300 pounds. He's a big actor. He was a very large human being. One of those individuals that he was so heavy at some point that he wasn't exactly sure how much he weighed when he really started to try to lose weight. And I think he actually at one point had to get on like one of those shipping scales to get weighed. But he talked about how he would, like when he was trying to get clean from drugs, he would he'd like have this week where he didn't use, and he would be like, I'm going to celebrate and go out and get a 40 ounce of beer. And then he would do that. Now, remember, he was heavily addicted to opiates and really hard drugs. And so beer didn't seem to be like a big deal to him. But what happens when you drink? Your judgment, your insight goes down. And suddenly he's like, I might be able to do a little snort of cocaine. And then before you know it, he's back on the opiates. Right? All because he was going to celebrate by engaging in a behavior that he was trying not to engage in. So watch how you celebrate those victories. Celebrate, but don't lose your mind. Track your progress, but don't lose your mind. Track it because it helps you see that you can do it and that you are doing it. All right? And I think Kathy shared, she shared a common experience for those of us who have wished to have a better relationship with the Earth's gravity, so to speak. We all have had probably the roller coaster ride of weight loss and weight gain. I lose it, I gain it, I gain a little bit more than I lost. And Courtney and I have talked about how great it feels. And it's almost kind of a head scratcher in a way, right? Because we are so used to doing that. And neither one of us have had a major weight gain in the nearly 4 years that we've been doing WW. So how did that happen, right? And Ethan Suplee also kind of talked about in a recent podcast, he talks about losing weight is more than just losing weight, right? It's losing weight and then maintaining your weight loss, that it's a long game. And he posited basically that, you know, we all seem to think that when the weight comes off, when we hit the goal weight, that we're cured. I know I did that, right? I've done that countless times. I'm cured. I can eat normally again. So I'm an abstainer. And if you're a moderator, God bless you. I wish I was, but I'm just not, right? I could be normal now. And Kathy talked about that too. And for many of us, we have been unable. I have been very unable and completely unwilling to compromise on my behavior as it related to food. In other words, I, in a literal sense, I wanted my cake and I wanted to eat it as well. I wanted to lose weight, and then I would fantasize about returning to McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, Jack in the Box or the pizza joint or Jersey Mike's or the best wing place on Sundays for football, right? Once I got my weight off, because, I'm just not willing to give that stuff away, to give it up in order to maintain weight, in order to maintain my weight loss. And again, I never overate on broccoli, you know. I wasn't passing out from eating too many carrots, you know. I never gained weight from eating broccoli or other healthy food, right? So it wasn't I couldn't moderate. I can moderate certain things. I can't with other things. And so again, what I'm talking about here, I think for at least for me, I think I figured out my own personal plan of weight maintenance, right? I think Courtney seems to have figured out that she can also maintain weight, right? And what goes into that. And I also, you know, if you don't know, so I lost 113 pounds, right? And many people have lost a lot more than I had in order to reach my goal weight, and I did. But I lost 100 pounds, and then the last 13 pounds took me 50 weeks to lose. And, you know, if you've had the experience of getting in the scale for like the third week in a row and the needle isn't moving, or maybe it ticked up 1 or 2 pounds, right? But it just is not moving in the direction you want it to go, even though you're quote unquote doing everything right, then multiply that by like 15 or 16. Because that's what I felt like I was dealing with. It was a 50-week plateau. But I had to figure out a way to reframe it so that it wasn't a negative. And I kept telling myself, oh, I'm not in a plateau. I'm in weight maintenance. I'm maintaining. What if instead of putting this huge emphasis on losing the weight right now, I just got comfortable and created this new baseline, right? Now, would I have preferred that it last 50 weeks? Not really. But it was very helpful because I saw that I could maintain a weight without a major gain. A major gain being like, you know, 10 pounds or more. 2 weeks in a row. And so why was that kind of a big deal? Well, you know, I don't remember how long it took me to get those last 13 pounds. It might have been like 2 months, 2.5 months, something like that. I really can't remember. But somebody said something when I weighed in and got my goal weight. They were standing right behind me and they heard, "Congratulations, you're a goal." And somebody behind me who I think may have been a lifetime member, doesn't frequent the meetings all that much, piped in and said, Now the really tough part begins. And I just kind of turned around and I was like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Maintenance." I'm like, "Actually, maintenance is a real piece of cake for me because I did 50 weeks of it." You know? And true to my word, 6 weeks later, you have your lifetime. So I was able to maintain it. I had already done it. You know? But through the whole weight loss thing, I was thinking about the day I got on the scale for goal. The day I was told you're now a lifetime member. And for me it was, well, what's going to happen the next day? It's kind of like having a wait and a date, you know, like, oh, my nephew's getting married in July. I've got to drop 40 pounds. I want to look good for those pictures, right? Well, you make the wait by the specific date, but you don't have a plan for the day after. What happens? You go right back, right? You go right back. It happens all the time. But I've done it. So don't allow a good plateau to go to waste. Wrap your head around it. Reframe it. Give it a meaning other than bad. Oh, I must always lose weight, because there's going to come a time when you can't, you're going to be at your goal weight, or you're going to be in that healthy zone that your doctor wants you to be in. And so you're not going to get that tasty, reinforcing feedback that the scale gives you on your way to your goal weight, right? So how are you going to reinforce your maintenance behavior?
you should start thinking about that, I think. There's a lot here tonight, right? Look, why do I talk about all that, you know, maintenance and getting ready for the day after? It's quite simple, because you're going to get there. I'm telling you, as sure as I am sitting here in the Sunshine State at this very moment, your goal is not unattainable. A life free from all the excess adipose tissue is not just possible, it's probable, as long as you don't stop trying and as long as you don't stop thinking. Use that brain. Okay. The next episode is going to be the travel and vacation tip module with myself and the wife, Courtney. So be on the lookout for that. We're going to discuss how going on vacation or traveling hasn't led to weight gain for us and has not caused us to return from such things with heavy hearts and heavier bodies. So I hope to check back and give that a listen. If you think you would like to share your story, and I hope you do, because it's valuable. You're going to help somebody if you share it, I'm telling you. If you got anything out of Kathy's story, man, your story is going to help somebody too. But in the event you would like to do that, or if you have a question, or if you have some feedback, or if you'd like to share a recipe or a particular hack, if you'd like to share any of that stuff, if you'd like to tell me that I talk too much, I shut up, send me a message. And you can send that message, whatever it is, to the inbox, weighinginwithpatrick@gmail.com. So it is now 11:50 p.m. Central Time. This is your podcast Sherpa Patrick reminding you, as always, to hang in there. You can do it.
Get out of there, Bear!